Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello and welcome to episode 98 of Geek Town Radio. We are back and this week I have with me Matt.
Hi David, how are you doing?
I'm alright, how are you?
Good, yeah, it's sunny and it's cold, so it's an odd kind of weather. Just took the bug out for a walk and I'm feeling a lot better than I did yesterday. Don't know if it was to do with the fact it's Monday or some weird thing like that, but definitely feeling better today.
Yeah, probably because it's Monday. Mondays are always like that.
Yeah.
So, what have you been up to the past few weeks then?
I have been watching Homeland. I came back on Sunday, so I watched that yesterday.
Yeah.
On Monday. Really good episode. I'm interested in what they're doing with a few of the characters, mainly, was it Quinn? Quinn's his name?
Yes.
I have to remember all the characters' names because it's been a little bit over a year because it was usually October and then they delayed it to January, didn't they?
Yeah.
I think because did they renew it for 6, 7 and 8 or something?
Yes, they did.
Something like that. Yeah,
yeah, they did a 3-season renewal.
Yeah, but Carrie is back, or is it Claire Danes?
Claire Danes. Yeah.
Yeah, she's back. It's pretty good. It's going to be interesting this year specifically for me to have House of Cards, 24 and Homeland. Three similar type shows. In a way?
Yes, I guess. I'm not necessarily... Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily put House of Cards in there, but yeah, certainly Homeland and 24 are very similar in the types of shows. So
yeah. And they've got Howard Gordon in there as well.
Yes,
I think the same guy does the music as well, so it's a lot of the same team.
Yes,
so.
It is. It's Sean Callahy.
Sean Callahy, yeah.
We've interviewed on the show before, yes. It's Sean doing the music for both.
So I've been watching that. Also been trying to catch up with House of Cards, as we said. I'm on just the start of season 3. I think I've watched the 3rd episode of season 3 so far.
Right.
Pretty good so far. I did think that I would get bored of it eventually, but because it's kind of like obviously heavily on political things because it's to do with the president and stuff, but Kevin Spacey's amazing in the show. He really delivers this guy that you don't want to like sometimes and this guy that you do want to like sometimes. Like when you see him come up against, not in a fight kind of way, but like I think it's the Russian president he meets at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like this clearly worse guy with worse intentions and like that sort of thing. And then you've got the woman who plays Claire. She's pretty good as well. Yeah, it's been an interesting show. It's made me care maybe 5% more about politics than I did before. Yeah.
So that's what, 5% then?
yeah, it was zero before. So yeah, I still don't really understand politics that much, but it's an entertaining show to watch.
So
that's been really good. I've noticed a whole bunch of stuff on Netflix, so I took some time out to actually, you know, use my subscription and watch some stuff on Netflix.
Yeah.
I watched The Take 10. I don't know if you've seen that advertised on there.
I have seen it advertised. I haven't watched it.
It's basically like a kind of road trip, teenage sort of thing that really takes a turn that, I don't know, some of you might expect it. I certainly didn't. But it takes kind of an interesting turn and turns into this kind of... there was a film a few years ago that... it had Matthew Fox in it. I can't remember what it was called, but it showed basically one of the things that shows the same situation but from different people's perspective that takes turns.
Right.
So
yeah.
So shows you how each person's situation matches up to the overall story, so it kind of works out that way. So if you think, how did this happen to this character, then it will go to their situation and it'll explain that to you. So really enjoyed that. There's a lot of different types of characters in there as well, people that you kind of do and don't expect. It's about an hour and 20 minutes, so it's a nice length, and it ends kind of in an unexpected way that you don't quite expect. Although some of you might, but Yeah.
Good.
I watched Rogue One, Star Wars film.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it was fine. It was all right. I agree with... I listened to you and Ross. I think you had Ross on it last time or before. I do agree with what Ross said. I wouldn't call it a waste of time. It just... I don't know. I would have liked to have seen these characters introduced before as well. In like a different... Something in like another part of something else. I don't know quite how that would have worked, but...
I suspect you may see some of those characters possibly pop up in the cartoon, because in the Star Wars Rebels cartoon, because that's the only place you can really do it at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because I doubt they're going to try and slot another movie in around that time period. So that seems likely. I don't know.
It was still good, and the Darth Vader stuff at the end was really, really cool as well.
Yeah.
And then... I won't spoil anything, but the CG versions of some particular characters was quite cool as well.
Yes.
What do you think they should do about the whole Carrie Fisher thing? Because it's a complicated situation, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it sort of depends on how much they have available to them from footage they've shot already for the next movie. If there's any extra bits, or maybe they can spread bits out across both films. That would be one possibility. I'm not averse to them using a CGI version if they need to for certain bits. I'm not sure I do it in the same way that they did Tarkin, but to that extent, like a fully digital character. But if they needed to use her in certain places, I wouldn't be averse to that. They have said, I think, that they're not seeking to use her likeness. They're not seeking to get permission to do that. So whether you're going to start the movie after this one with something getting blown up with her inside, I don't know.
I definitely think that if you killed her on screen in like a digital version, that would be kind of hard for Star Wars fans and for basically everybody else to considering. The actress has unfortunately passed away. So to see her there on screen would be maybe even harder.
Yeah.
So yes, it's a complicated thing. I think that if they ask the rest of her family, can we use like CG and stuff to put her in the rest of the films, and they say yes, then I don't see any reason why they can't. Like, that's the ultimate person that you ask, really.
Yeah, I mean, they have said they're not doing that, but I don't know whether that maybe will come up. It's tricky. It's very tricky. I'm sure they'll find a way around it. So I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't quite, in a similar situation, I haven't seen, is it Fast and Furious 7 where Paul Walker passed away?
Yes.
So obviously it would be a little bit spoilery for me to know, but I haven't found out how they work their way around that yet. So I've never known any other situations like that before.
There have been a few occasions.
Things I've seen, I don't think.
No, Oliver Reed in Gladiator, they did it with. They used bits of CG even back then to finish off bits and pieces of his performance. So, I mean, it's not unheard of. And they did do it with Paul Walker for some of bits of Fast and Furious.
Okay. But, because he hadn't finished filming at that point.
No, but they had sort of, so they reworked it. So they used the footage that they had and took him out of some scenes and then used bits of kind of CG work to put it back together. But so I don't know.
Let's see what they come up with.
Yeah.
I also watched Doctor Strange as well. Did a little bit of a film's catch up. One we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
Really liked it. It was really cool. It was definitely a fresh take on superheroes and on Marvel. Like, and a nice break from the Avengers, which we've seen like three times now, because we've seen them in Captain America and in the first two Avengers films. So it was a nice break to get away from those types of superheroes. It wasn't another Iron Man film. It was like a fresh new character as well.
So
it was really cool as well. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a nice way to introduce the kind of magic thing into the Marvel universe. I thought it worked really, really well. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how he gels with everybody else when they start mixing him in with other members of the Marvel world. So
yeah. Yeah, I heard that him and Hulk are going to be in Thor.
Yes.
Ragnarok, whatever that film is called.
Thor Ragnarok.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, I heard that he's going to be in that as well, so that should be pretty good.
Yeah.
He's a bit like a magical Iron Man, in a way. He's sort of a bit like that.
Yeah, I guess.
A little bit, yeah. I played there's currently a 3-hour trial for Watch Dogs 2, which is on the PlayStation and the Xbox, so if you have both, go and try them out on both.
Yeah.
Which I played, I also did a first impressions video for that as well. Really good game, mate. Have you played it?
Played the first one. I've not played the second one. I was slightly put off by some of the reviews I'd seen for it, so I might wait until it comes down in price a bit and then go and buy a version of it.
Yeah, it's still pretty fun. Still fun to just go around and just work out where to hack and what's the best route to take and the route that you're not going to get spotted, unless you don't mind getting spotted. But then it turns into a bit more of a, not Uncharted, but more of an action game than a stealth hacky kind of game. Telltale came out with Walking Dead Season 3, which is the first 2 episodes. Really good start. I like the way they reveal a return of a specific character. It's quite nice.
Okay.
Fun as well in the way that because Clementine's in this season. It's funny how, because we've known her since the start, but we're playing as Javier and he's just met her, so it's kind of you have this longer relationship with her, but you're controlling the guy who's just met her.
Oh, okay.
Because when we met her as Lee in season 1, they were both fresh characters to us. So it was sort of the same 3-way type of relationship. Like, we were new to them and they were new to each other. So it's interesting to play it that way, because he doesn't quite have... He has the trust of her, but he doesn't quite have that close relationship that the character, the player, or Lee had with her. So it's quite interesting that way.
Yeah.
It does get slightly to a point where when you consume so much Walking Dead, whether it's the comics or whatever, that... if someone's dangerous and they're threatening them to kill somebody in the group, that inevitably you have to take them out or get somebody else to do it, which we've seen in different occasions in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And like whether someone's worth saving because you know that they've got like the best way of going about things. So it's quite interesting that way as well.
Yeah.
Have you started it yet?
I haven't yet. No, I think I've actually got a little bit of the last game to finish as well. Because I was waiting for all of that to come out, and then it got kind of left by the wayside until and other games overtook it. So I need to go back and finish that off as well.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I got the season pass for it, and there's also, if I don't think it's on the Xbox, but if you go on the PlayStation, Telltale's Minecraft is on sale. It's £12, and that's for all 8 episodes, and that's the cheapest I've seen it.
Yeah, like, I was going to say,
the whole thing is like 30 episodes, £30 some places I've seen. So as soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, I'm not going to see this cheaper anywhere else for a while. So
yeah,
that was pretty good to pick up.
That's worth it, definitely.
Mm. Especially the 8 episodes, not just 5. So I've watched the first 2 episodes of Firefly, the old Fox sci-fi adventure series that... you guys keep talking about.
Yes.
So it's what the fuss was about. Really good. They're obviously, of course, it's going to look older than some other stuff, because it is. But yeah, I'm excited to see where their adventures go, and then they'll be short-lived.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's been really good as well. And then I watched that little Disney film that came out 4 years ago called Frozen. took off quite well.
The one person in the world that hasn't seen Frozen yet, yes.
Yeah, I think so, maybe. Yeah. It's weird. I often see, like, on Facebook, people say, oh, I'm watching Frozen with my child for like the 10th, 15th time. And I'm like, yeah, I haven't got around to it yet. but I just kind of put one Sunday morning aside, and my niece was over, and we sat down and watched it, and it was really good.
Yeah.
The one small, not complaint really, but I thought Elsa would be in more of the film.
Right. Yeah. No, she isn't. Yeah.
She's really cool. And she does all this ice stuff, which I didn't know that either. It's like I watched the trailer on the Friday, and I was like, I'm watching a trailer for something I haven't seen that's like 4 years old.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that she had powers until I saw that trailer. So I was like, oh, she shoots like ice out of her hand. That's really cool. So yeah, it was cool to see that in there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically what happened.
Cool. Cool. Well, I also watched Homeland, which I really enjoyed. I'm really happy to have that back. I think the stuff with Quinny's interesting. I want to see whether they're actually going to get him back at some point, or whether they're going to end up killing him off, or I don't know. That's kind of interesting.
Some people have called him like the Jack Bauer of Homeland now, which not in the action badass sense. We haven't really seen that, but in terms of a guy that goes through some rough stuff and he's the male character of the show, I definitely agree with that in that way. I did kind of laugh at the scene where, you know, when that guy comes in, this isn't really that much of a spoiler. When the guy comes in and Quinn's holding this can with his right arm. And then he says, "Give me your money." And
he's trying to get the money out of the jacket.
With one arm and one hand, he's trying to hold his can and get the money out. And he says, like, "Hurry up and get the money out." And these other two girls are just sitting on this bed watching. I was just like, "What's up with your other hand?"
Yes, he was somewhat stoned at the time. That was really good. I'm so happy to have Homeland back because I do love that show. So I watched that. There's been a number of things returned as well. Lucifer came back, which again is really fun, and I'm enjoying that series immensely. So I'm glad to have that back. Bones also back for a final season. It's getting to the point where I'm glad that they gave it a final season so they could wrap things up, but it's getting so preposterous at this moment that I think it's time it should end. So I'm going to watch this final season, but I am, I'm sort of...
Hurry up and get there kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's at the point where it's good that it's probably coming to a close. I've seen a couple more episodes of Legion as well, which I've had previews for. Whereas it was difficult to judge it on the first episode because it's so kind of weird and odd, that first episode, that it's very difficult to see where it's kind of going. But the second and third episode, there was also suitably strange, but it kind of jumps backwards and forwards and references things you've seen earlier and that sort of stuff. So it's really nicely put together, and over a number of episodes you start to see how they're building it. So it's a really, really interesting series. So it's out on 9th of February on Fox, and I'm looking forward to that coming on TV and see how it goes down with the audience, because I think it's on, I thought it was on Fox, I think it's on FX in the US, which, you know, it's an interesting place for it. It's going to be interesting to see how well that goes down. Also this week, I've seen the first episode of Emerald City, which I think is actually airing in the US now, but I got a preview for it because that comes out over here towards the end of February. We've not got an exact date for it yet, but it will be towards the end of Feb on Five Star that's coming. So the way I would describe it is it's kind of the Wizard of Oz shoved through a filter of the 100 and Game of Thrones.
Wow, okay. Yeah, that's... I don't... You've lost me.
For example, Dorothy is...
Wizard of Oz, Elsa, and Game of Thrones. Those are two very different things.
Yeah, Wizard of Oz... Yeah. Wizard of Oz, sort of the 100, Game of Thrones would be the touchstones I would give to it. Dorothy is a sort of 20-year-old girl. She's basically adopted by a family in a farmhouse. She's left there by her biological mother, who is a drug addict. So that's a sort of dark starting point. She caught up in the tornado, which takes her to Oz, but is hiding inside a police car. She sees the tornado coming, jumps into a police car for refuge. The police car gets kind of whipped up in the tornado, and that's the thing she's in that drops her in Oz. So that's how she gets there. And she's actually a nurse, but that's how she ends up with the police dog, which is named Toto. So Toto is a police dog. The Scarecrow is a rather hunkier kind of guy that she finds being crucified on the yellow road that she's following to get to Emerald City. Mm-hmm. And he's lost his memory. So that's, you know, the Scarecrow character. The Wizard is played by Vincent D'Onofrio, who many people will know played Kingpin on Daredevil Season 1.
Right. Okay.
He's playing the Wizard, the wizard is basically a sort of dictator character that is running Emerald City. And it's very interesting what they've done with that, because rather than being kind of this little guy that is hiding behind a curtain, they've taken that as a kind of psychological metaphor for him. So he's got a sort of psychological curtain that he hides behind. So he puts himself forward as being this kind of really loud, angry, brash person that's confident and in charge. But in actual fact, there is definitely something more going on behind that. And he's clearly not entirely sure what he's doing, and he's faking quite a lot of it. So that's the sort of way that they've done it with the wizard kind of behind a curtain. It's sort of a psychological curtain that he's hiding behind. So it's a really interesting take on Wizard of Oz. It's called Emerald City, comes onto Five Star towards the end of February. But I think that's going to be quite a good one to go and watch when that comes out. Mm-hmm. So I've been watching that. A Series of Unfortunate Events, I'm about halfway through that now, which is brilliant. It's just funny. Suitable for a sort of PG audience.
Okay. It's got Neil Patrick Harris, right?
Yes, that's got Neil Patrick Harris playing Kent Olaf in it. The kids in it are brilliant. It's really entertaining show. Each episode is basically Neil Patrick Harris's Count Olaf trying to con the person who the kids have been left with, because the kids are orphans, and something usually happens to the person that is in charge of them. So in each episode, they get moved from like one guardian to another, or every couple of episodes they move from one guardian to another, so the guardian gets kind of killed off or is, you know, imprisoned or whatever, and they end up moving to a new guardian, and then he comes back, Kent Olaf comes back with a new disguise trying to con the orphans out of their fortune. So it's funny, it's weird, it's brilliantly put together. I can't recommend that series highly enough. Mm. It's really good.
I did go to watch it and then I didn't. I don't know why. Yeah. I think what it was, I went to watch it and then House of Cards just came up. I'm like, yeah, I'll just carry on with the House of Cards. I want to finish some stuff before I move on to other stuff.
Yeah, I'm sort of trying to do that as well. There's a number of things on Netflix I want to get to and I haven't yet. So there was that. There was a couple of documentary things that I watched, Bright Lights and Wishful Drinking, which are both by Carrie Fisher. Bright Lights is the documentary she did, which is sort of more about Debbie Reynolds, her mother, who is a classic Hollywood starlet.
Yeah.
And it was done a couple of years ago, and it's her doing kind of interview pieces with her mother and their life together, because they lived in a compound together. So they were very, very close. And it's about sort of them growing up and her relationship with her and that sort of stuff. But that's quite beautiful. And if you're a fan of Carrie Fisher, it's worth going to watch. That's on Sky On Demand if you want to go and see that. There's also a thing called Wishful Drinking, which was a stage show that Carrie did, and that's again her talking about more about her life and relationships and drug taking and that sort of stuff, which is very, very funny. So that's called Wishful Drinking. You can get that on Skybox Sets as well. That's worth going to watch. Gaming wise I had a little bit of a play with Dishonored 2, which I'm really enjoying.
It's
a stealth game. I'm sure there is magic coming into it. I'm only at the very start, but it's pretty much like the first one, really. It's a stealth game, basically sort of trying to, you can either play it as a stealth game and avoid all the guards, or you can go in guns blazing, but it's a lot more difficult to play it that way. It's you get the choice at the start to play as Corvo, who was the character that you played in the first one, or you can play as the princess, who is now the queen, who was the person he was protecting in the first one, and she's now grown up, so you can play as either of them. So that's kind of a new interesting twist on that game, but it's good fun. I've been enjoying that. There was another game called Urban Empire, which I've just started playing, which is sort of a city builder with kind of politics thrown on top.
Right.
It's by the same people that make Tropico, which is a brilliant, brilliant city builder game. So I kind of bought it on that basis. I don't think it's as good, and I think it's maybe a little early to tell. It's very difficult because it's brand new. There's not that much information in terms of, you know, you can't go and Google things if you can't find stuff, you know, because it's a brand new game out. So
yeah.
I'm still trying to work out if things are working correctly or not in the game, or if there are things that are bugged in it and it's, you know, it's not working how it should. So I don't know. I don't want to kind of overly judge it yet, but yeah, I was struggling a little bit with certain things. It doesn't guide you through very well in terms of how to actually play. So you kind of, it gives you a few little hints and then you're completely left on your own. Isn't very good for that sort of game, for those sort of city builder games. It's quite difficult to work out. It doesn't give you enough feedback in certain situations on like how changing certain settings will alter how things build and that sort of thing. And it doesn't really give you enough feedback to be able to do that properly. I think it could do with a bit of extra work, but we'll see. We'll see what the rest of the reviews say about it, but that was my feeling on it.
Okay. I did go to buy the first Dishonored because it was about £12, the definitive edition. But then it was out of stock, and then I went back to the same shop, and then it was out of stock, and they haven't had it in stock since. So that's the only reason I've been able to play it, because I can't.
It's good. The first Dishonored game's really good, so it's worth getting. So that's what we've been doing this week. Next up, we have some film and TV news. So we'll start off with the big news that dropped yesterday. Star Wars Episode 8 finally has an actual title, and it will be called The Last Jedi. So it'll be Star Wars The Last Jedi. Thoughts on the new name?
As soon as I saw this name, one, I saw every single news thing report it within like 5 minutes. I've noticed specifically with comicbook.com, they were like, what does the title mean? What does it mean? And then they made like two separate posts. And I was like, okay. I was thinking that some people might think that it would mean like someone specific would die or something like that. Because the last of something means, you know, you have to somehow get rid of all the rest. Like, are they going to do something with Luke in that way? Or are they going to... I don't know, because they said that Princess Leia has a bigger role in 9, so she's not going to die in 8. And if it's something else they had planned, I don't know. But that's kind of along the lines where I was thinking. Because it feels like in a way of moving on to the generation of Finn, Rey, and is it Poe? The pilot?
Yes, Poe.
I think that's the name, yeah. In a way of moving on to them, in a way.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, there was a couple of interesting things about it. Firstly, the fact that the logo is red and not yellow, which they've done for some of the darker movies in the past. So, you know, whether that is indicative of the fact that it's a darker themed thing, I don't know. There was clearly, I mean, I think it was done obviously as a clear choice to do it in red. So it's interesting.
It's just funny how a company releases a logo for something and a name and everyone loses their mind.
I know.
I think that the week leading up to Red Dead Redemption 2, all Rockstar posted was an image of a black letter R.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was it.
I remember that. That was very funny. I mean, it is incredible that literally all they've released is a logo and people are analysing it to death.
Some people have even been like, oh, I don't like the name, I'm not gonna watch it. I'm like, you haven't even seen a trailer yet.
That would be ridiculous.
Like, really? Yeah.
If you're not going to watch it because of the name, that's stupid. But yeah, The Last Jedi, the other thing that somebody pointed out actually is Jedi is potentially plural for Jedi. So the fact that it's called The Last Jedi could actually mean the last Jedis, because Jedi is plural of Jedi.
Okay.
So it might actually not mean the last one singular. It might mean the last ones, plural.
Okay, so the last ones standing, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Rather than the last one standing.
Yeah, it might be the last ones standing. So it may be Luke, it might be referring to Luke and Rey in that, quite possibly. I don't know. It is interesting and certainly has got a lot of people speculating. But as you say, there's only so much speculation you could actually do, no matter how much people are trying with it.
Wait for the trailers to come out and then see what people do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm sort of quite interested in that. I did think the color choice was interesting, though. I think it'd be interesting to see whether that is significant or not. You've got to assume that it is, because they don't do these sort of things by mistake usually.
No.
So you've got to
not a massive company like that.
Then. No, and not knowing how much traction that was going to get.
What,
so
what about if the opening score's in red?
Yeah, well, that would be different. I don't see that happening, but yes, that would be quite different. But yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. The new movie is being directed by Rian Johnson. Rian Johnson did make a comment about the fact that he wanted it to be, the new film, to be a blast and funny and to be a ride the way Force Awakens was and the original Star Wars movies were, which doesn't sort of scream it being darker, but he does say the Force Awakens and the original Star Wars movies. And people would put Empire as being the darker of those films. So, you know, I don't think that means it can't have darkness in it somewhere. I might have a bit more of a downer ending to it than the others. But who knows? Who knows? We'll see. So moving on from Star Wars, Sky Atlantic have got a couple of new, well, one new, one old commission that they've given to some shows. First one is called Gone. It's written and created by Lenny James from Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. It's going to be directed by Nick Murphy, who is a BAFTA-winning director of Occupation and the Last Kingdom. It's also got Saran Jones in it. It's got Stephen Graham in it. Stephen Graham from Boardwalk Empire and This Is England. Saran Jones from Dr. Foster and Scott and Bailey. Set on a southeast London housing estate, Gone follows a unique and unlikely hero in the form of Nellie Rowe, who is played by Lenny James. He's a man that likes a drink. He spends his days bookending his day with his first and his last pint. Nellie lives with whichever woman he happens to be sleeping with at the time, more often two or more than once. He's the life and the soul of the pub. He's a charmer, a chancer, a bit of a fighter, a liar, a man that really should know better. He's accused of a terrible crime, so sets off to clear his name and find the real perpetrator. It's a journey that slams him hard up against the debris of his careless past, but also offers him a chance to make amends for some of his mistakes. So it's kind of an interesting sounding one. Sounds like Lenny James basically thought, I like the sound of this character, you know, I'll write myself a nice role in this.
Yeah.
It's going to be coming on Sky Atlantic at some point next year. It's called, well, either later this year or next year. It's called Gone. It does beg the question, what happens to Morgan in The Walking Dead? Although
it depends how many episodes this is. If it's 13 or like a 12, 13 thing, I can see him doing both. Although we said that about Ethan, he literally walked off. I don't know.
Then you know, at the moment, as far as we're aware, Sonequa Martin-Green, who is playing the lead in Star Trek Discovery, at the moment he's still alive in The Walking Dead. I mean, you know, admittedly, we've got another half a season to potentially kill her off, but difficult to tell whether it means anything or not. I suspect with it being a Sky Atlantic series, you see, it may only be 6 or 10 episodes.
Yeah, maybe. How many is Lucky Man? That's like 10 or 8, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 8 or 10, I think, Lucky Man. So, you know, it's not necessarily going to be that long. So I don't see it as really being a problem for Walking Dead. I think it, you know, potentially he could do both. Or they could just killed him off and that's why he's doing this.
He'll see him at the start and then at the end of the season.
Yes, like we did with Heath, So there's that. Also coming back for a third and final season is The Tunnel. This one's subtitled The Tunnel Vengeance. This is the remake of the Nordic Scandinavian show. I sort of watched the first couple of episodes of the first season of this and then kind of dropped away from it. So, it was fine, but it just didn't grab me. So I don't know. It's going to be set in Europe amidst the hysteria surrounding the refugee crisis, increased threat of terrorism. So, you know, very much nothing to do with the tunnel, I think, at this point. But,
you know.
So, that will be back, I suspect, towards the end of the year as well. There's those two to look forward to. And finally, in the news, we've got Star Trek Discovery has found a new cast member, but is also delayed again. So it's not been an easy thing getting Star Trek back on the small screen.
How many times has it been delayed?
Twice now. This will be the second time. Because it was supposed to be January, and then they pushed it back. Then they announced Brian Fuller was no longer going to be in charge of it because he had to go off and do American Gods. So they pushed it from January to May, and that was supposed to give them more production time. They've now apparently pushed it back again, so that May slot has disappeared. Chances are that if they pushed it back again, it's probably not going to turn up until autumn, I wouldn't have thought, because that's going to be their next big launch slot. So, you know, because they've got sort of a big launch slot in January, one in May, and then one in autumn. So you would think that they will bump it to the other side of the summer if that's the case. The casting announcement was that they've cast James Frain, as the father of Spock. He's playing Sarak. And Sarak's been on the show a number of times in various guises. He's been in the movies as well. So James Frain, you'll know as Theo Gallivan, who goes on to play Azrael in Gotham. He was in The Tudors. He's popped up in...
one of the most annoying characters.
Yeah.
I think I've seen it, something. Yeah.
He's appeared in The Tudors, True Blood, Orphan Black he was in. He's been in Grimm. He's been in True Detectives. He's been in Age Carter, he was in Fringe, he was in an episode of 24, The White Queen. So, I mean, he's popped up kind of all over the place. It was funny, actually, because when that announcement went up, I got a text message off Andrew going, no, not James Frain. So, because he finds him incredibly wooden. And I did point out that, well, if that is the case, and that, you know, having somebody who doesn't really display emotion on screen is probably quite a good person to play a Vulcan, I would have thought, on a TV show. But I think that's a little harsh on the guy. But, you know, I do think he's quite a good pick for playing a Vulcan on screen. So, you know, at this point in the Star Trek timeline, Sarek was the Vulcan ambassador to the United Federation of Planets, and he goes on to marry an Earthwoman called Amanda, and they give birth to Spock. So, you know, Spock is half Vulcan. We don't know, as I said earlier, an air date for Star Trek Discovery yet, so we've currently got it set as unknown, but as I said, the likelihood is if it does miss that May air date, it's very, very likely they'll shove it into the autumn, because that's when their next big launch period is. So we'll see. Mm. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Next up, we have an interview. The interview this week is with production designer Barry Robinson. His latest work is on a movie called Hacksaw Ridge. Hacksaw Ridge, actually, they've just announced the Oscar nominations. Hacksaw Ridge has just been nominated for 6 Oscars. So,
right.
So that was quite fortuitous. It's the directorial return of Mel Gibson, who hasn't directed a movie in 10 years. So it's Mel Gibson back behind the camera. It stars Andrew Garfield from Spider-Man as Desmond Doss, and it's based on a true story. It's about an American soldier in World War II who fights on the front lines without a weapon. He's named as one of the greatest heroes in American history. He was an army medic who single-handedly evacuated the wounded from behind enemy lines, saving 75 men, and was rewarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. So it's a fascinating and incredible story. Barry was the production designer on the movie Hacksaw Ridge. He had to build everything from battlefields to bunkers, barracks, Japanese farmhouses. They even had to build this enormous cliff face, which he talks a bit about in the interview. The other thing was that they also had a very, very minimal use of CGI. So a lot of the stuff that's in the film was done using practical effects because of a very limited budget that they had. So he was a fascinating person to talk to. We also talk about how it was working for the first time with Mel, and on Mel's first movie as a director in 10 years as well. So here's the interview with Barry. We will see you afterwards with some air dates.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, Barry. How you doing?
I'm excellent, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for coming on and spending a bit of time anyway to talk to me. It's very nice to have you on. Should we start off a bit about your background? How did you get into the business in the first place?
Oh, wow. well, I was, when I was a little boy, I was a a child actor.
And then, really?
Yeah. And, but I, you know, as I got older, I didn't think I was any good. So I drifted into behind the stage and, went to university and got my degree in scenic and costume design for theater.
Right.
And, of course, went east, stopping first in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where there was a fantastic theater by the name of the Guthrie Theater. Right. And then I went to Chicago and I worked with David Mamet and all those boys out there, you know, at Steppenwolf and all those companies.
Cool.
And then I went to New York. And then I starved in New York as a, you know, wannabe theater designer. And I drifted into daytime television where you could make money. And, so I did the soap operas for a number of years. And
oh, wow.
that was fantastic training. And then one day I woke up and I just said, oh, I've got to go to Los Angeles and get in the movie business. So I indeed came to California. And didn't know anyone and had to start all over from the very, very, very bottom.
Yeah.
And then claw my way up. And so I did. There it is. That's how I became a production designer.
So, you worked across a huge range of films. X-Men Origins, Wolverine, Wedding Crashers, Pitch Perfect, Ouija you did recently, Vacation, Chronicles of Narnia, Voyage of the Dawn Treader was one of yours as well. So there's a lot of films. The latest one, Hacksaw Ridge.
Yes.
Which is a really fascinating story. I love it when they find these little stories that aren't necessarily all that well known and then turn them into big movies. So yeah. Stars Andrew Garfield as Desmond Doss. It's during the Second World War and he served during the battles of Okinawa but refused to carry a weapon and became the first conscientious objector in history to be awarded the Medal of Honor for act of bravery, which is a brilliant, brilliant story.
Amazing.
How did you get involved with the film?
Well, I had just finished a comedy. I came back to California and I said to my agents, I don't want to do any more comedies. That's it. A moratorium on comedy. And they said, okay. Well, we'll set you up with interviews with some producers. And I said, oh, wow, fantastic. Thinking they would never come through. And I got a call from David Permit and his office. And they said, do you want to come in and meet with David? You know, and I was going, yeah, absolutely. He's very well known and, you know, a really great producer. And so I sat down with him and we had an incredible rapport. I mean, really just back and forth. And it was just a lovely meeting. And towards the end, he said, well, what are you up to? And I said, well, I'm not up to anything. I just got back. And he said, well, are you wanting to get back to work? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, I've got a little project, you know, not a big budget, a little project with Mel Gibson and Bill Mechanic. And I sort of went, whoa, back in my chair. And he said, would you like to go in and meet? And I said, absolutely. I would love it. So I went in and I met Bill and Mel and had a great conversation. Well, perhaps the reason it was so good, it was more like a production meeting than anything else, is that my mother was Australian. And right. When I was doing Wolverine, I became a citizen, you know, a dual citizen.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, because I thought, well, you know, open up another market.
Yeah,
maybe.
No, totally.
I'll get a job a little more easily, blah, blah, blah. But because I've done so many movies in and around Sydney and the Gold Coast, I really, really, really knew that East Coast of Australia very well. And because Mel grew up in Sydney, he also knows the area very, very well. So we could sit there and have, oh, what about Goulburn or how about Bringelly or blah, blah, blah. So we were all sort of having more of a production meeting than an interview.
Yeah.
And so it had a great, great meeting. And I left the room and I thought, okay, you know, that went really well. And I called my agents. I said, what went really well? And, you know, and then 1 week goes by and then 2 weeks go by. And then all of a sudden you go, oh, maybe I didn't do so well. And the third week came and the job was mine.
Yeah.
So, which was great. And then I flew to Sydney and we just started jumping right in.
Yeah. Given that you've been told by the producer, it's a small project with a lot of money and you've got to basically recreate World War II. What was the first thought that goes through your head at that point then?
It explodes. You just go, oh no. And I've got to tell you, I wrote an article for the Art Directors Guild magazine, and I titled it Three Jeeps, Two Trucks, and One Tank. And that's all we had. I mean, we were really under such tight constraints. So we had to use a lot of tricks. And this now goes back to my theater days. I mean, I was really using a lot of tricks because we didn't have the money for a lot of visual effects. So I kept talking Simon Duggan, the director of photography, and Chris Godfrey, the VFX coordinator, and Mel into doing things the old-fashioned way. Yeah. So smoke and mirrors, a lot of smoke. So it was really, really, it was really challenging. You're pursuant to your question, though, a lot of times when you don't have a lot of money, you simplify everything down. You really begin to boil the visuals down. You know, you pick the right locations, you choose the right scenic elements and prop elements and vehicle elements, and you make them really work, and you make them work hard for you. And sure enough, that's exactly what we did. And, you know, I had willing partners, yeah, in doing it, and you've got to have that.
So in terms of research, how much did you know about World War II beforehand or designs, or was it, were you basically starting from very little knowledge and having to do a ton of research for it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. My dad and his brothers were all in World War II.
Right.
And so was my mother. She was in the Air Force in Australia. You would hear the stories. I would hear the stories sort of in the back room at my dad's petrol station, you know, of, you know, the War of the Pacific and this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, you have those vague ideas of what it's about. You look in books and magazines and online, and you get a sense. But reading Desmond's story was just incredible. And with any kind of research you do, you always start with the human story.
Yeah.
But for this one, I went to the World War II Museum in New Orleans. A lot of people don't know that it exists. Okay. It's an amazing, it's huge. It is huge. And it's split up between the different theaters, you know, Africa, Europe, and then the Pacific. And it's an incredible resource, just the most amazing resource. So I went down there and I started looking up the Battle of Okinawa, and then got a bunch of research material, and I brought it home. While I was down there also, I went to a couple of my favorite bookstores in New Orleans and found a wonderful book on old Kodachrome images from the 30s and 40s, sort of on the home front.
Right.
So we really used both elements. We used the Kodachrome images for Lynchburg, Virginia, and then we were using the research that I did for the Battle of Okinawa. And the interesting thing about the Battle of Okinawa, most of the photographs were aerial photographs. You know, right. So you didn't get a lot of, you know, in-depth understanding of how the landscape had been sculpted by the shelling and the bombardment. And I found a number of interviews with men that had been through the Battle of Okinawa and Hacksaw, and they describe what it was like. And so when we started the designing with my team, I started with my model maker, Jeff Kemis, who is brilliant and has done all of my movies with me in Australia. And we decided that we were going to do a big, big clay model in about 1/8 inch scale to 1 foot. So the model itself was probably 2 meters wide by 3 meters long, something like that. And it was because Mel didn't really want to use any of the modern tools available to us, like Maya 3D rendering.
Yeah.
Was not interested. He wanted to do it the old school way. He wanted to take little toy soldiers and set them up and get the lens down, you know, viewfinder down onto the field and look through it. And it became this amazing tool for all the departments, from special effects, VFX, stunts for the first AD, you know, and Simon and Fromelle, they were able to really take and use that battlefield model and really plot out how they were going to set up each war. And then we took the model, my department took the model, and we took it out to the pasture where we built the battlefield, and were able to use that as sort of the maquette for the sculpting of the landscape.
Wow, that's really impressive. You mentioned Mel wanting to do that sort of stuff old school rather than modeling. When it actually comes to the shooting of the film, what's the sort of ratio of stuff that you're physically building compared to CGI in terms of sets and things?
That's a really good question. For the battlefield, there was very little, if any, CGI work.
Wow.
Yeah, because we had built the battlefield as a bowl, and we pushed earth up onto the side, so it was an earthen berm, and dropped the land down so that when the camera was down with the actors, you were looking up into the sky or into earthen berms. And then we were able to put big fog tubes around, and it just made a gray sky. So you couldn't see any eucalyptus trees.
Right.
You couldn't see anything, so that Chris Godfrey didn't have to put in CG every shot. That's one thing. Okay. So that's one element.
Yeah.
Now we get to the road to Okinawa. We were on the same farmland. So we did, we built the road to Okinawa, and what Chris did was he filled in the rest of the road and then laid in the harbor. So you saw the battleships, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So that was, but we were having to count the number of visual effect shots because we were so, so tight. And it was really super tough. Now on the American side, one thing that you might be interested in is when we first see Desmond, he's a little boy running through a forest with his brother.
Right.
And they go climbing up these rocks. It's called the Peak of Otter. And so they're climbing up these rocks and then going up, and they're up there, and they're woohoo, look at us. And then the camera swoops around and you see all of the beautiful mountainscape of Virginia in the background. Well, those scrambling up those little rocks and peaks was in Sydney Harbor. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you turn the camera around, you're looking into the Harbor Bridge. And so, of course, what was laid in was when the boys got up on top of the rocks, green screen was put up, and the camera was able to put in, you know, see the mountains of Virginia. So
yeah.
It was, but we were really, really, really tight. And really weren't many of those shots. So we were not dependent upon CG. It was really, again, old school techniques. And, you know, we all really struggled, you know, and there had to be a lot of faith going forward because, you know, trust me, this is going to work. It's going to work. You're not going to see the eucalyptus trees. And Bill Mechanic, the producer, would go, God damn it, I see eucalyptus trees and I can only, you know, we can't get a 360 shot. And I said, you will get a 360 shot. You lay the tubes back there. You fill it with, you know, you turn the camera here. You turn the camera there. Oh, it was a true battle, you know, but I think we succeeded.
yeah, that's incredible. So with having that sort of limited budget and only being able to do a certain amount of CG stuff, what was the most challenging thing on the shoot?
Well, you know, the battlefield was definitely a challenge. You know, doing any kind of period film anywhere can be really tough because we've got a lot of 21st century things encroaching.
Yeah.
And then to be making an American movie in a foreign country is a real challenge.
Yeah.
So for the Virginia sequences, it was, we struggled finding Desmond's house where the family lived. It was a real struggle. You know, I kept saying, no, it's great. It's going to be great. You're going to love it, blah, 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 blah. And there wasn't a lot of love for that. But, you know, but for the street, you know, where they go to the movie theaters and this and the other thing, we found a town called Richmond in the Hunter Valley. And it had a feel, You know, it had sort of a feel of an American town from the period. And then we had to do storefronts. My decorator, Rebecca Cohen, and her team were fantastic. They did the storefronts, and they really made the town come alive as an American 1930s. But my poor vehicles coordinator, Jeff Naylor, he really had a hard time. We really struggled finding period cars, first of all.
Yeah.
And we couldn't find any American period cars. So we had to make fake steering wheels and take the original steering wheels off. So it looked like we're, you know, because in America, they drive on the left-hand side.
Yeah.
And in Australia, the right-hand side. So, I mean, it were, you know, fun thing, you know, silly things like that. But here's an anecdote for you. All right. And this is a classic movie. So when we were building the battlefield was on a 18-degree slope.
Yeah.
And this is the top of the battlefield, and the guys arrived down here.
Yeah.
This is, it's called the Gates of Hell.
Right.
So they were down here, up here, were the Japanese. So, okay, so we're building, my supervising art director, Mark Robbins, and I build. We're just going along, we're building. And Bill Mechanic comes to us one day and he goes, "Hey guys, we were down in Brinjelli, or Goulburn, excuse me, we were in Goulburn, and we didn't get the shots that we needed for the cliff face." And I was going, uh-huh, yep. And he goes, "You got to build a cliff face at the battlefield." And we're going, what? And so, of course, we're on a slope like this. And it had to be here. So what that meant, we had to dig down into the ground 40 feet, out 100, and then 70 feet wide. So, and then we went up, we molded, took molds off of the cliff face, cast them in fiberglass, put them on our cliff face. And the coolest thing
inside
was Mel was able to get his close-ups.
Yeah.
But he was also able to get, it's basically a one shot. So what happens is you've got your cliff here.
Yeah.
And then you've got battlefield running up to sort of my eye line. And he was able to have the guys climb up, get onto the battlefield and run. And he could do that all in one shot without doing a VFX, a visual effect.
Yeah, yeah.
So all of a sudden,
yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, and the only time I think we used a VFX on that battlefield was when they needed to get very wide, very, very, to show it really huge. Because our battlefield was the size of a small, very small football pitch.
Right.
You know, not even.
Yeah.
You know, not. So, I mean, we were really, again, we were just constrained by a budget. But, you know, the one thing that people should know is that it's not always a detriment to have a tight budget.
Yeah.
It just means you've got to be more creative.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes you think.
It definitely makes you think.
So, of course, the other thing, I should just talk a little bit about working with Mel Gibson. I mean, the guy's done big battle things before, although, in ancient Scotland, I guess.
Yeah, indeed. Well, you know, I was really, I was nervous going in on the interview, you know, because, you know, it's Mel Gibson and he's like Mel Gibson. I've known him, Mel Gibson, you know, almost all my adult life. We're the same age.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, and I was also nervous about going in and meeting Bill Mechanic because they both have these big, big reputations, you know, and Mel had been in the penalty box. Let's talk about it. Let's get that out of it. He'd been in the penalty box for 10 years. And I was nervous about that. I really, you know, nervous, but, you know, he put me at ease so completely, almost immediately. And he's a self-deprecating guy.
Yeah.
And he knows he's the first one to say, "I screwed up."
Yeah.
You know, and enough said.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. And what happens with Mel, it was a joy for me to watch, you know, because, you know, you can see I've done a lot. I'm a, you know, as they say, I'm a veteran.
Yeah.
And Mel had not directed anything. He'd acted, but he'd been out of the director's chair for 10 years. And so he was very tenuous in the beginning.
Mm.
And that was really interesting.
Yeah.
He had an idea. He knew what he wanted. He could definitely say no, yes, blah, blah, blah. But he was you could tell he was finding his way. And the exciting thing for me is that I could bring him something, he'd get excited, you know. And then as we got closer and closer to shooting, he became more and more of a master filmmaker. And by the time we were ready to roll camera, he was all in. And wow, it was really great to watch, you know. And he was just so, he can be so inspiring, and not in an overt way. He never asks for anything. The guy doesn't ask for anything, but you want to give him respect. You do. You want to give him respect. I respect him tremendously. You know, as a filmmaker, he's right there. He's right at the top.
Yeah.
And he's got a real clear vision. He knows what he wants, how to get it. And he's a collaborator, you know, and that is rare, you know, because there are very, especially when you're working with somebody for the first time, and I was working with him for the first time, there's a little bit of, you know, the egos can get involved, you know, things can be miscommunicated. Never with Mel. He was always just clear, present, knew what he wanted. If you had a problem, if you could give him more, he would love it. So it was great. And I say this without, you know, any hesitation. He's one of those guys. I've got about two other directors I feel the same way about. If he said, hey, buddy, come on, let's go up in that airplane and we're going to jump out. No parachutes, just follow my lead. I would do it with him. He's that kind of guy. You know, and one other little aside, that guy is fearless. He has no fear. He is the craziest ever. We were up in Goulburn, which is about 120 kilometers out of Sydney to the south, actually. And we were up on this ridge, and we were really high up. I mean, this ridge is like, it's way down there. It's like 5 or 6 stories high. You know, and he would be literally on the edge, looking over, thinking, leaning, you know, and I've got vertigo, so I'm not going to the edge. So, but he made me crazy. I was always worried that he was going to fall off the cliff, you know, because he doesn't have a harness on. Yeah, yeah. He's a strong guy. Yeah. He's a really strong guy. So, but he was great. He was really great.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, yeah, like you say, he's made some mistakes, but he makes incredible films, and I sort of want to see him back on top again. And the trailer for Hacksaw Ridge looks fantastic. I really like Andrew Garfield. I think
I'm going to stop you right there.
Yeah,
that guy is one of the most amazing actors I've ever witnessed, and I watch a lot of dailies. There were a couple of times, David, where I was watching dailies. I had to turn it off. It was just, he went to such a personal, internal place that, you know, for that character, he's perfect. He couldn't have been better. Take after take to pull up that kind of emotion. It's just, he is extraordinary. And I've liked him in all of his movies. And I loved him in 99 Homes. But wow, he is so incredible in Hacksaw. He's just amazing. He channeled Desmond to a T. I mean, he was amazing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the actual film, because I've only seen the trailer so far. So, it looks really interesting. It's a fascinating subject. As I say, I love Andrew Garfield, so I think that could be really, really good.
Well, you know what? I know you've got to go here in a minute, but when you're looking at the film, let me just tell you the thing that I think has been standing out, and the reason I'm getting a lot of interest, is we decided that we were going to do a color palette for the film. And there are 3 sections of the film. So when you're watching it, see if you think about it and then drop me a note. If you go, oh, yeah, that was cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, so for the beginning, you know, I told you we used a very realistic palette. We didn't want to do the sepia tone thing of remembering in the past and blah, blah, blah. So we kept it sort of just in a very soft palette range. So naturalistic, very soft, blah, blah, blah. Then we went to Fort Jackson, where the military base is, and we used a palette of green and beige with one shot of like a burgundy, burnt blood running through it.
Yeah.
And the only time I deviated from that was in Desmond's cell. You'll see where he's been thrown. He's in trial. He's thrown in the cell. And I used a research that I had done on a monk cell in Eastern Europe, because I felt that it was sort of right for him. And so I had a number of photographs from traveling around Europe, and I pulled it, showed it to Mel, and he said, yeah, that's really cool. It's a little barrel vault, just this little barrel vault.
Right.
And there's a cruciform window. That's the only allusion to religion in the scene. But I took away the color palette and made it a black and white scene, you know, because it was really, you know, using sort of a psychological underpinning of where the guy was at, you know, because he's made a decision. He's not going to betray his religious beliefs. He's not going to pick up a gun, come hell or high water. This is what he, and so by splitting the room in between black below and white above, Simon and Mel were able to raise and lower the camera. And by doing that, raise and lower the amount of black or white in the scene or pushing them. So it added visual tension. And then the third is the fog of war.
Yeah.
And then you see the battlefield. So anyway, three concise elements in the film.
Oh, that's really interesting. I'll have to keep an eye out for that when I see it.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think we've been on like half an hour or so. So there are a couple of final questions that we usually ask people.
Sure.
The two things we usually ask are, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Oh, wow. Game of Thrones, needless to say, everybody in the world is watching Game of Thrones. Wow. And to be honest with you, because of the election here in the United States, we've been watching a lot of reality TV. So leave it at that.
Yes. Yeah. Anything to...
You know, I've got to, you know, one other show that I'm absolutely addicted to is Penny Dreadful. I don't know if you know it.
Yes. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Ava Green is a goddess.
Yeah.
She's like amazing. Just unbelievable. Anyway, so those would be my two.
I know you mainly work in film, but if you were to get involved with a TV show, which one would it be?
Oh, yeah. Well, I just think I've named, I would be more than happy to do, you know, a really great big period drama of some kind.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, the other one that I'm lying. I can't believe I didn't say this, but I mean, the other show that I watch, you know, pretty religiously because it's so out there is Walking Dead. Love Walking Dead, you know. So, I mean, you know, I would love to get into, you know, a big, big television show, you know, because what's going on in TV right now is you can really expand.
Yeah.
You know, where films in the past had all the money, now these big TV shows have all the money.
Yeah.
And, you know, my background, you know, I love fantasy. So, you know, it goes way back to my theater days.
Yeah.
So would love to do that.
Yeah.
Love to do it.
I think, you know, you're finding certainly with a lot of the actors are coming across TV shows. I mean, you've got Anthony Hopkins on Westworld at the moment. Robert De Niro's just signed up for something on Amazon.
And Meryl Streep is also...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I've done a number of pilots that just haven't gone.
Yeah.
It's too bad. I did one down in New Zealand called Lumen for Spielberg. And that was so cool. It was steampunk world.
Oh, wow.
It was so cool. I just was desperate for that to go.
Well, it's so difficult, particularly with pilots, you know, because they could be brilliant, but if the network that you're pitching to doesn't like it, what can you do, you know? So
you know, they either work or they don't work.
Yeah.
But I've got some amazing photographs from Lumen.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they just blow my mind when I look at them because they're just so cool, you know, with the airships and, you know, strange vehicles and all that.
So, that sounds very brilliant.
Anyway, there you go.
All right. Wonderful. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I thank you for coming on. I'm looking forward to seeing the film. So,
Okay, David. Well, it was a pleasure. And if you need anything else from me, just give me a jingle.
I will do. Thank you. Cheers.
All right, cheers.
Bye. So that was the interview with Barry. Hope you enjoyed that. Here's some air date information. So air dates this week, no cancellations, couple of renewals. Sneaky Peter's got picked up for a second season, so we've got that. This Is Us, which has come no great surprise, has also got picked up for a second season because it's been a massive hit in America, that show, so there's no great shock that that's back. Changes, we have Lethal Weapon, we now have an idea of an air date. It's going to come at some point, I think later on in March. So this is the TV series based on the movie starring Mel Gibson again, handily. I've actually seen the first two episodes of this at a screening, and it's really fun. It has very much the spirit of the movie in it, but, you know, redone for TV. I really enjoyed it. It's going to be one definitely worth looking out for. We'll probably talk a bit more about it next week, but I really enjoyed that, so I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. Last Week's Night with John Oliver returns for a fourth season, which is absolute genius. I'm very interested to see what he comes back with on Donald Trump. So that's on Sky Atlantic on the 13th of February. We've got Rain returning for a fourth season on Netflix. That'll be the 11th of February at 8 a.m. It's basically the day after the US. So, yeah. Blacklist is back for the second half of season 4. That's shifted channels. It's moved from Sky Living to Sky One. That's going to be on the 8th of February at 9 p.m. Billions returns for a second season. That's on the 21st of February at 10 p.m.
I just couldn't get into Billions. I don't know what it was, but I don't know.
There is a lot of kind of stuff to do with hedge funds and politics and that sort of stuff in there. So,
yeah,
you know. But I really enjoyed the first season of that, so I'm looking forward to the second season of that. Damian Lewis and Paul Giamatti in that. The first season of Billions is up on Sky Box Sets if you want to go and catch up with it. Major Crimes, season 5B, that's coming back for the second half of the season 5 on the 27th of February at 9 p.m. House of Cards, season 5. That's coming on the 30th of May. That will be on Netflix. That's moved back a couple of months from, it's usually comes in like February, but yeah, they've moved it back a few months. Whether they've moved it back because of the election this year, I'm not sure, but I think they also had a change of the showrunner as well, so that may be more likely why. But
yeah,
I'm looking forward to that coming back. Shades of Blue, which is J-Lo as a police detective. She's back for a second season of that on Sky Living at some point in March. There's a new comedy called Carter's Get Rich, which is actually a British comedy, but James Van Der Beek is starring from Dawson's Creek. He's actually starring as a tech billionaire. It's a comedy about a boy genius who develops an app to make his family rich sort of overnight, and James Van Der Beek plays the billionaire that gives them the money and buys the app. So that's coming to Sky One in March. It's called Carter's Get Rich. Wild Things, third season of that, which I've never seen. It's on Sky One. It's basically a sort of version of It's a Knockout with a nature theme. That's coming to Sky One in March. Midnight Sun, season one of that, coming to Sky Atlantic. It's a French-Swedish co-production. It's a high-concept, higher Nordic noir series about a French police officer investigating a murder in a remote Swedish mining community. It's called Midnight Sun. That's in March on Sky Atlantic. Lucky Man, season two, or should I say Stan Lee's Lucky Man, season two, starts on the 24th of February at 9 p.m. That's arriving. I really enjoyed the first season of that, so I'm
going to try and get around to the first season of that because it's on the box sets then.
Yeah, that is on the box sets if you want to go and catch up with that. It's very good. There is a show coming to Amazon Prime starring Kevin Bacon called I Love Dick. It's based on a book, I seem to remember. It's too hard to explain, so I would say go and watch it if you like Kevin Bacon, because it's a fairly complicated, slightly odd show, that. So, yes. But coming to Amazon Prime on the 12th of May, that is. And Sense8 Season 2, that's coming to Netflix.
Finally.
Yeah. There was that sort of weird Christmas episode thing that they did, and the Season 2 of Sense8 is now arriving on the 5th of May on Netflix. So that's back. back. Next week on TV, we have Further Back in Time for Dinner, which I think that was one of Andrew's shows that he put on. BBC Two, that comes on the 24th of January at 8 p.m. There is Fortitude Season 2 arrives on Sky Atlantic. That's on the 26th of January at 9 p.m.
My dad started watching the first season. I think he's finished it, actually. And then I told him it's coming back on a Thursday.
Yes.
What we did, we dropped the BT TV thing. And then we've just got now TV boxes, because you can have like four devices on one account.
Right, yeah.
We've got one each. So yeah.
Now it's worth doing. Yeah. Now TV boxes. I got one. Yeah, they're fantastic. You can get a Now TV box off Amazon right now for I think it's 20 or 30 quid, and it comes with 6 months of Now TV on it. So I mean, it's actually probably cheaper to go and buy a box every time you want to renew it and throw the box away just to get the code.
Yeah, and then just sign in.
Yeah.
Because it's like with any kind of account that stores information like that, it will still have like your watch list and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it'll be on your account. So, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a quite a good way of doing it, but it's a great service. If you can't get Sky, or if Sky's too expensive for you, Now TV is a much better way of doing it. So yeah, that's Fortitude Season 2. That's back on the 26th of January at 9 p.m. Next up is a big one. Riverdale, Season 1 of Riverdale arrives on Netflix on the 27th of January. Should be there from about 8 p.m. in the morning. 8 a.m. sorry, in the morning.
I'll have to watch the trailer for that, because I've heard good things, but I haven't seen the trailer or anything yet. So.
There are a few trailers kicking around. I think we posted some on the website, actually. It's Greg Berlanti, the man behind Flash, Arrow, all those shows. It's his kind of dark take on Archie Comics. So it looks really interesting. It looks a bit like it's going to be some sort of teen drama mixed with Twin Peaks. So it could be really quite interesting, that show. I'm looking forward to that coming. Last Leg is back for its 10th season, which sees Adam Hills, Alex Brooker and Joss Whittaker return. That's on 27th of January at 10 p.m. that arrives. I love that show. It's hilarious. Zed, the Beginning of Everything, or Z, the Beginning of Everything, because it's an American show, comes to Amazon Prime. That's on the 27th of January as well. That stars Christina Ricci as Zelda before she meets F. Scott Fitzgerald. So it's Zelda Fitzgerald meeting F. Scott Fitzgerald. Basically, there is an argument to say that Zelda is responsible for quite a lot of F. Scott Fitzgerald's writing, and he nicked it off her. So I think that's part of the reason why they're doing a show about it. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. finally.
Yeah.
Finally arrives.
Yeah. Now we just need Channel 5 to stop putting random stuff on and get Gotham back.
Yes, Gotham is going to be later in the year. I'm trying to find out when later means, but it is going to be later in the year. So, difficult to tell. But yes, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for now. Anyway, that is back on E4 for its fourth season on the 29th of January at 9 p.m. So now with added Ghost Rider for this season. So, and because it's so late after the US, we should get it run straight through as well. So we'll get the whole series in one go rather than about three different bits, which is what it's been in America. Suits is back for the second half of season 6. That's on Dave, and that's on the 29th of January at 10 p.m. So you can watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and then watch Suits straight afterwards.
So Home then is on is that a Sunday, the 29th?
Yes. Yeah, it's a Sunday. Yeah. So Black Sails for season 4, that's the final season. That's the pirate drama from Michael Bay. That comes on to Amazon Prime on the 30th of January. Then we have Flash back and Supergirl back. Supergirl is back on at 8 p.m. on the 31st of January. Flash is back at 9 p.m. on the 31st of January. So they're now both on a Tuesday, and they basically will be following each other.
All right. So the CW said, right, Legends of Tomorrow isn't doing great, so we're going to put it after our best show, which is The Flash. And then Sky said, we're going to be even weirder and do doubles on Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, so they've doubled up. So, Flash and Supergirl will be on Tuesday next week, then Legends, then Arrow on the Thursday next week. So, looking forward to those coming back.
Yeah, I think they got, they've done 9 each. Legends is shorter, isn't it? Legends is, what, 17 episodes?
Yes.
16, 17?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, except the others all on 9, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
I've had 9 episodes, yeah.
So there's a few more to go yet, but they've also made some announcements about the musical episode today as well. Yes, the musical episode of which is coming of Flash and Supergirl, they've cast Darren Criss, who was one of the people that was on Glee, as Music Meister. Yes, so yeah, he'll be playing Music Meister on the new episode, which is episode 17, I think. I mean, they're calling it a crossover, but it's not too like full-length crossover episodes. It's basically what they did last time, in that Supergirl will kick it off right at the very end, and then the Supergirl characters will go into Flash. And the Flash episode is entitled Duet. That should be coming on the 28th of March.
They'll be on the same night, won't it? Because they're like that.
Yeah, they will be. So Supergirl will run straight into Flash. 28th of March, assuming they've not got any more breaks coming up. So that's going to have Grant singing. It's going to have Melissa singing. Darren joins them as Music Meister, who's the villain for this episode. Jesse L. Martin, who played Joe's West, is also going to be singing in the show, as is Carlos, who plays Cisco. From Supergirl's side, Jeremy Jordan is joining them, who plays Wynn. And then from
Were they all on Glee or something? Because I know that Grant and Melissa weren't they?
No, not necessarily. Jesse Martin's, he's like an old school song and dance guy. We've actually seen Jesse Martin sing on the show already, on the alternative Earth, on Earth 2. So you've got those. Victor Garber, again, he's another stage guy. So he plays Martin Stein. He's going to be on it. And, of course, because you would have had to lock him in a crate and drop it to the bottom of the ocean to stop him being on it, John Barrowman will be appearing as Malcolm Verlin on the show as well, and will be joining in the singing. Apparently, David Harwood, who plays Hank Henshaw, and Mon-El, Chris Wood, who plays Mon-El, they're both going to be on the show, but I take it don't have much musical talent because they won't be singing. So
I wonder what like the lead up or like the cause of it will be.
Well, I mean, Music Meister is a music based villain, so I imagine that he's going to be the cause of it. But
how will make them all sing?
I'm not entirely sure. I know he's a character that showed up, I think, in the Batman cartoons. I think he's been on. So we'll see. In the cartoons, he was played by Neil Patrick Harris, or voiced by Neil Patrick Harris. It's a shame that they couldn't get him to come and do it on this, but I do get the reason why they've gone for a Glee cast member, an ex-Glee cast member, to do it, because that sort of makes sense. But, you know.
Yeah.
I would put Neil Patrick Harris in most things. So.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's everything for this week. If you want to find out the latest UK air dates, you can go, or the latest news, you can visit the website at geektown.co.uk. You can get in touch with your questions and comments by emailing us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. You can find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, or on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, or on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.